American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. My name is David Lazar. I am your host. Today we have a very special guest. We have Jim Bombach of Newsday. He has been covering the Nassau Coliseum announcement for Newsday. It's been a great time for him. So first, we do have the weather. Today in Hunterdon County, it is very rainy and snowy. It's 40 degrees and there's a lot of snow on the ground with a lot of wind. Tomorrow, it will continue to rain, mostly before the night. And we will expect a delayed opening in the school districts because the roads are very treacherous. I can attest to that from driving here. So expect a delay tomorrow, and that is your weather. We will have one quick ad, and then we will start with our interview with Jim Bombach. Thank you.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. This is David Lazar. We are here today with Jim Bombach, who is a writer for Newsday, who has been covering the Nassau Coliseum announcement, which we talked about last week. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so today I just want to discuss your background in journalism a little bit and also the thing that you have been covering for the last few months, which has been the Islanders' return to Nassau Coliseum. So the Islanders have, as you know, the most interesting arena situation, playing situation, perhaps in all of sports. For years, the arena has been a topic of debate, and finally, it seems like everything is resolved. What has it been like being the person to cover this chaotic chapter in Islanders history?
It's been fun. I mean, it's been a fun story to cover now and in the past because it's one of those stories that there's just a huge appetite of interest in it. People clearly want to know where will the Islanders be playing, and for the longest time, the answer was not clear. So that's why, you know, when you cover sports, a lot of times you're chronicling what's happening on the field or in free agency. You kind of have a sense of what's going to happen. For years and years and years, you never really knew what was going to happen with the Islanders and their arena, and even up until the last couple months. So from that perspective, it was just fun to be the person trying to get the answers to provide that to Islander fans who have an insatiable appetite for this.
Yeah, and you've been doing a great job. I know I've written many articles. I've been embedding your tweets, and I know you've really gotten a lot of popularity. You were on NHL Network recently, and it's just been a lot of fun to watch you cover this really crazy story that many fans who aren't from the island, who aren't hometown Islander fans, wouldn't really understand. One thing that's kind of played a part in this was the Lighthouse Project that was failed with Charles Wong. He really put in a lot of effort to that, and a lot of things didn't go his way. We were speaking to Alan Hahn recently, and he just said it was wonderful to work with Charles Wong. He was such a great owner, but just he got so unlucky. And then Barclays Center happened. It was supposed to be this great move, and just a lot of things that the Islanders really can't control, whether it's the piping of the arena, the traveling, the commute, has really not gone their way. So how has the past really built up this suspense, built up this appetite for the Islanders to return to the Nassau Coliseum?
Yeah, it's crazy, too, because, like you mentioned, they did move. So, like, in my mind, the story was over. The story was over when in 2012 when they announced they were going to Brooklyn. I mean, they had their arena at that point. They had their new home. To me, they were no longer a Long Island team at that point. They were no different than, you know, the Rangers or the Knicks or the Nets or any other team, because they, you know, for the longest time they were Long Island's team. So, in a way, the story was done, and it's a bizarre turn of events because then it wasn't too long. I guess there was a couple of years in there before they finally did move, but then after they moved, you start hearing about the opt out, and even at the beginning of that, it was like, you know, is this really, you know, are we really talking about this again? But like you said, it just built up the suspense all over again, and suddenly it became a train, and then the new owners came involved, and it's really fascinating from that perspective when you look at how the timeline from the Lighthouse. I mean, really, it did take off with the Lighthouse, because that was the all-out attempt to get something done in Nassau. The referendum was kind of a last-gasp effort. But then this was the suspense was really that this seemed to be almost too good to be true, because it seemed like it was Belmont, speaking by, it seemed to be too good to be true, because it seemed like it was, how can this not happen because of everything aligning for the Islanders. The only reason not to believe as we got closer to it was just that the Islanders' history suggested that something was going to crop up at the wrong time.
Yeah, the Islanders have not had good luck in terms of that. But one thing that I really want to point out is just the Islanders really did get lucky. I was listening to an interview you had with Joe, what was it? It was on a radio show. And basically they were talking about how cocky the Islanders management was, and how they didn't have a backup plan. And it was rumored that the Islanders, I remember the nightmare that was Kansas City. That was a rumor a long, long time ago when I was really young. And then it was Hartford, and, Brooklyn was the solution. And then, now it's the Coliseum in Belmont. But one thing that's really crazy is just how politics has played a part in this, whether it's with the Lighthouse Project, the Islanders moving originally, Nassau Coliseum, the renovations, the $6 million going in. Politics has really been the driving force in the Islanders arena situation. So I just want to ask if you can comment on just how politics has really driven the Islanders to end up where they are now.
100%. I mean, number one, if you go back to Long, I know you said that Allen had referred to him as being unlucky. And I guess in a way he was unlucky, just based on the fact that he bought the team in 2000, knowing that he had 15 more years on the lease in Nassau Coliseum, and actually believed everybody when they told him that, oh, we'll get something worked out. That obviously, it was not the path that was meant to be. But that being said, I wouldn't say he was unlucky with the Lighthouse Project, because in a way, at the end of the day, he did have an option. I think he refused to play the politics game of really not creating any waves and letting things run its course. He really tried to drive the ship, which is, Charles's way. That's how he was successful in business. But in the political world, things need to line up, and you need to let things play out. And clearly he wanted to do things on his time frame. And, it's hard to argue for or against and all the different things, especially going back in time. But I do think, looking back on that, while people like to say that, the Kate Murrays of the world, were the true enemy, it's true that politics, killed that project. But I think Charles definitely, stood in the way of finding some kind of middle ground in that. Now, that being said, in terms of politics on this one, I think the Islanders owners, clearly understood that there's a path that they need to play, they need to go down this road to get this to work. Not suggesting that anything, undue occurred or anything like that, but they had to, not create waves. I mean, this was clearly a Cuomo project. This was something that he wanted to, be a success at Belmont. And obviously, time will tell how that plays out. But, I mean, we all saw in that press conference on December, I guess it was the 20th, I believe, when it was a real dog and pony show. I mean, it was something that they really wanted to celebrate. And, whether it was the better plan than NYCFC, who knows, but it's hard to envision Cuomo having a party like he did for NYCFC, that as he did with the Islanders, or even for the development group that was going for it as well. Now, how does politics play into that? I think politics plays into that in the sense that they knew that we need to answer this RFP. We need to figure out what the community wants. They want a train station. Okay, so we need to really pump up the importance of a train station. What is the RFP looking for? They're looking for something that's going to include, all this type of different retail opportunities. I think they tailored their RFP answer, and, we still haven't seen the full, answer, which I look forward to seeing when the lease comes out, probably a year from now. But, they tailored everything to answer specifically to what the RFP was calling for. And that was something that, they obviously clearly knew that we need to do this to please the proper people. And so, I mean, I think that's how politics plays out. And they didn't create the waves and put up any doorstops along the way.
Yeah, it's really important to realize that this isn't just a hockey arena. This is really it's going to be a place that everyone can go. There's going to be a park. There's going to be a hotel, a shopping complex. It's going to be a really great area for New York, one that can be a defining area in New York. And I think that's what Governor Cuomo really wanted. He doesn't want this to be like Barclays Center, where you know there's a nice arena. They really fixed up a bad area in Brooklyn, but he wants more than that. He wants it to be its own area. He wants it to be a landmark, really. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
Yeah, and the interesting part about it is that what this really is the Lighthouse Project, in a way, taking place at Belmont. I mean, obviously, there's different plans and different projects, stuff like that, but Lighthouse Project, at its core, was a mixed-use, retail, movie theater, all type of entertainment stuff, surrounded by an arena. Now, what's different about this is that it's a new arena, and it has the possibility and the potential for mass transit. I think that's what really does change this here, and where it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out and how the Long Island Railroad and MTA and all those people can what can they do to make this station up to speed to include not just trains on game days, but more often than that.
Yeah, it's really difficult to get to Barclays Center. I know from experience, I liked it. I liked Barclays Center. I thought it was very clean, very state-of-the-art. But getting there, I have had some issues. When it's a holiday game, Penn likes to close down some lines, and it's difficult to get from Penn to Barclays sometimes. You know, the 2 and 3 train are the main ways to go. But sometimes you got to transfer. I had to go to 14th and take another train and transfer again. It's very confusing. And hopefully with Belmont Park, there will be a very great arena that will have a great train station as well, because that's important, because that's how a lot of people are going to be getting there, although less people will be getting there by train from Barclays. So that's great to point out. And then one thing that I do want to talk about is on our website, driver5.blog, we have had a lot of articles going up. We have quoted you a lot debating the Islanders arena situation and mainly the next 3 years. And one thing that's really interesting to keep in mind is that the Islanders are very glad to play in Nassau Coliseum. Every game, it seems like, is one that they'll cherish and they will prefer, as opposed to Barclays Center, because they're closer to home. But the whole idea of splitting games is very concerning, and how that would potentially affect the team mentally. And I just want to ask, how will this splitting of games affect the team? Do you think they'll be very happy that they get games at Nassau Coliseum, or will they be a little concerned by the dynamic of splitting games and how that will work itself out?
Yeah, I mean, that is the question. That is a great question, and that's the question that really all of us are guessing at this point. I mean, you're right, the Islanders today are very happy about this. They live on Long Island. They practice at Eisenhower Park. You know, all of it points to Nassau Coliseum being far more convenient than the Barclays Center is right now for them. I mean, clearly we heard all the stories about moving to morning skate, all that type of stuff. How this plays out, though, over 3 years is going to be intriguing, because it's not often that a home team has to, the players have to look at their calendar to figure out, is our home game at the Coliseum tonight, or is it at Barclays Center tonight? There's an unusual aspect to that. The only scenario that that anyone's mentioned to me that is similar is to when the Montreal Expos played essentially half their games in San Juan right before they moved to Washington, D.C. What's different, though, there is that, you don't have to wake up and figure out where your games are going to be that day. You're either, with your team in San Juan, or you're with your team in Montreal. It's just that you have two different, completely different homes. Mm-hmm. How this is going to play out, what the players think, I think that's going to be really the story of the next 3 years, and also the story of how it impacts the team. I mean, do they have great home record at the Coliseum and a poor one at the Barclays, or vice versa? Do fans go only to the Coliseum and not Barclays, or vice versa, which obviously is hard to envision. It's a huge one, and also how does it impact free agency? It was asked of Ledecky that the other day, and he thinks it's going to be a positive in free agency, because he thinks the Coliseum is a draw on a short-term basis. People like playing there. they just don't like it being their home for years and years and years to come, which is why the Islanders, you know, struggled in one aspect to get free agents. So, I mean, my long-winded answer is I don't have an answer for you. I mean, it's, I think you're going to be reading a lot over the next 3 years, and I think it's going to be nothing to sneeze at. It's going to be impactful for the Islanders. Whether it's a huge positive or a huge negative remains to be seen.
Yeah, and we talked about this mainly the whole episode on our last episode. We had Kyle on, who was actually at the announcement. Drive for Five was able to attend the announcement, which was a really big step for our website, because we were with you, we were with New York Post, NBC, NHL, and we were able to see firsthand. And the atmosphere there was great. The Islanders were very happy to return to the Coliseum. And we asked John Ledecky a lot of questions and Brett Yormark. And one thing that I kind of noticed and Kyle noticed was that there are a lot of rumors already speculating how will the season be split. You know, if the Islanders have a 3-4 with two home games, let's say, are you going to have one at Barclays and one at Nassau Coliseum? That's basically three different arenas for four games. That's really confusing, and it might not really take away from the home ice advantage. So what I want to ask is just, let's say the Islanders have a great first season at Nassau, bad first season at Barclays. Let's say there's a lot of factors that would make Nassau Coliseum seem more, more obtainable, more, beneficial to the Islanders than Barclays Center, which is a very likely situation. Do you think the deal could be moved? Do you think the Islanders could be playing two full seasons at the Coliseum instead of two split seasons? And is there any leeway for Brett Yormark to say, we don't want the Islanders, they don't want to play here, let's split this and just give the Islanders to Nassau Coliseum for 2 years? Is that possible, or will the Islanders be splitting for the next 3 years?
It's definitely possible they could add more games. That's definitely within the realm of possibilities. Whether they want to, whether it's reality, remains to be seen. Brett Yormark definitely wants them to play at the Coliseum. I mean, in his perfect world, they play all 3 years, every single home game at the Coliseum. But he has no capabilities to force them out. He has no legal ramifications to do that. There's nothing in the deal that gives him the power to do that. So all he can do is hope that the games at the Coliseum are such crazy success that they have, 13,900 fans at the games and two fans at the Barclays Center's games, and it makes it so obvious that they should be playing the games at the Coliseum. In terms of whether it's clearly it's possible. Anything's possible. They could add more games. What they agreed to was a minimum of these 60 games at the Coliseum. You know, I think it's 54, give or take, regular season with six, give or take, preseason. But that being said, you know, John Ledecky, clearly you guys are there, you know, Ledecky doesn't want to play them there. He wants them to be split because the revenue that could be generated through Barclays Center is just so much greater. How that plays out, if only two show up there and 13,900 show up at the Coliseum, does that mathematical equation still play out to be more money coming through the Coliseum? That remains to be seen. But, you know, right now the lines in the sand are that this is the best deal for the Islanders. They want nothing more. And the only thing I'd say is, we heard in the past that the Coliseum was not an option even on a short-term basis. That was the talking point from the Islanders and from the NHL. Obviously, they backed off that to get this deal to work. Does that tell you that they could back off this and go full or go more games? You know, maybe. But I think right now that the best bet is that it's going to play out as they agree to it. You know, 12 games next year, 21 the year after that, 21 the year after that, and then they move on to Belmont.
Yeah, that's definitely the likely option. I actually, ironically, just had a business competition for school this week, and one of the components of the game was finding the perfect number where you tried to sell this product and how low you can go without losing money. I think the Islanders are going to have to find that perfect number. If so little people are showing up to Barclays that it's actually becoming like ridiculous, like lower than the people that show up now, and there's losing money off Barclays where there's a lot of potential revenue, who knows what can happen? The Islanders, you know, lose every game at Barclays, win every game at Coliseum, which obviously won't happen. But if the records are, there's a huge mismatch, you never know. So I think that's important to keep in mind that things can change, and we don't really know how things are going to go now. This could be changed. So I do want to ask you one more question. Sorry to hold you a little after, but
sure, no
just
problem.
Just personally, you've really succeeded in your field, just like a lot of people we've had on, and it's really admirable to see you, you know, working for Newsday and really, you know, doing a great job in your job. And you attended college to be a journalist at St. John's. You left the Journal to return to Newsday in a risky decision, and you know, you really have, you know, that was a big risk, and, you know, going to college for journalism, which is something I'm considering, is also a big risk. So I just want to ask, what advice do you have for young aspiring journalists out there to get what they want in life, to get what they want in their career, and just take these risks in life that will pay off in the future?
You know what, I'm impressed you did your homework. You Googled pretty good and came up with some good stuff on me. Number two, I would say, you know, pieces of advice. I, you know, whenever people ask me about my road and my path and stuff like that, I'm always reminded that no two paths are alike, and especially in journalism, things change so quickly. So what my path was 20 years ago is going to be so different than the person today, and the person today is going to be so different than the person, you know, 10 days from now. It just changes that drastically, and timing's everything. But that being said, you know, pieces of advice that I've really lived by that's really you know, that guided me on big decisions like the ones you referenced is, you know, you got to follow your heart. You got to do what your gut tells you to do. And you know, I mean, when I was at St. John's, I wanted to be a sports writer. You know, I wanted to be a sports writer because I like sports, but also because I liked being the messenger. I liked being someone who found out information first, you know, before other people, and then got to tell other people and be the person to tell them that and to inform them that. So I liked that. But what I was told in the 90s when I was in school, not to date myself, but here I go, but what I was told back then was that journalism is a dying field, and it's a hard one to get into. So, you know, you should better have a backup plan. And I remember hearing that and being, you know, really concerned about that. And this is in the 90s. This is, you know, people are still hearing that today. And that's not to diminish, you know, how hard it is to get jobs in this field. But I say that because, you know, you can be talked out of doing anything, but you should do what you want to do, and you should pursue what you want to do. And if you're passionate about it, you should go after it. You live once. You know, why not go after it? So that's number one. Just in a general sense, I would say, you know, whatever you guys want to do, whatever anybody out there wants to do, you should do everything in your power to do that. Number two, if you want to be a journalist, if you want to be in sports, sports writing, sports reporting, you know, the number one thing you got to do is read. And read, you know, obviously follow people on Twitter. You know, that helps. You see how the people, you know, you follow, you see what they do and what you like about them. But then more importantly, you got to read the stories. You got to read the newspaper stories, the magazine stories, the long stories on the internet. Because and you got to read stories. The best thing I was told at a young age was to read stories about teams you're interested in, sports you're interested in, but also read stories about teams you're not interested in and sports you're not interested in. And the reason why is because it forces you to see the different the methods to going about reporting and writing, and you see how stories came together, and you see, you know, why did this person use this quote here, or how do you think this person got this piece of information? You know, reading is the best tool for that, because basically it gives you an opportunity to you know, learn on the fly. I mean, your newspaper is your textbook, more or less. I mean, when I have a slow day at work, you know, I go through and just read other people's stories, and I try to come up with ideas just by reading other people's stories. So that's the best thing you can do is, you know, follow your heart, follow your gut, you know, do what you are passionate about. But also, just if this is what you want to do, just read, and that will take you down the path that you will follow what you want to do through reading those stories.
Yeah, thank you so much for that great advice. I'm, you know, picking what I want to do in the next 4 years of my life, and you know, I am dealing with that. People telling me, you know, there's, you know, you gotta have a backup plan, all that stuff, and it's something that, you know, I've been concerned with. But I think, you know, it's really important to keep in mind to pursue what you really want to do, because you do only live once, and, you know, to follow your gut. So thank you for that great advice. And thank you so much for coming on to the show, Destination Hockey, on the 100 and Chamber Radio, the voice of business. It was an honor to speak to you. Everything you said was so insightful, and it really helped inform all the listeners about hockey, give them a little insight into what it's like to be a journalist. And just, it was a great opportunity to speak to you. So thank you so much for coming on.
No problem. problem. Thanks for having me. Call anytime.
Okay, great. Thanks. Have a terrific day, and I will definitely hope to speak to you soon. So that was Jim Bomback of Newsday. It was an honor to speak to him. And right now, we're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we have a new segment for you guys that I'm really excited to do. And we have some videos to play. I'm trying out some new stuff on this show. So make sure you stay tuned to Destination Hockey on the Hunter and Chamber Radio, the voice of business.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi and Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. We just had an amazing interview with Jim Bomback of Newsday. It was a great opportunity to speak to him about Nassau Coliseum, the Belmont Park Arena for the Islanders, and also his career as a journalist. He clearly took risks in his life, and it was just great to hear him talk about those risks and how he really made it in his field. So right now, we have a new segment for you called Let's Talk Hockey, where we will go around the NHL and discuss all the things you need to know. A lot of you guys listening come from New Jersey, may not be the biggest hockey fans. Hopefully you've stuck with us on our show so far, and you've really been interested by the stuff we've talked about in the NHL, which is one of the best sports leagues in my opinion, and I just love to talk about it, as you can see. So first, one of the big stories this week has been Marc-Andre Fleury returning to Pittsburgh for his first time in his career as the visiting team. Marc-Andre Fleury is currently a goalie for the Vegas Golden Knights, and he had an amazing career in Pittsburgh as the goalie, winning two Stanley Cups, and he holds the records for games played, minutes played, and wins and shutouts for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and he truly is a Pittsburgh icon. So this was his video that the Penguins played for him as tribute, and when you take a listen, it's really just touching to see what he means to Pittsburgh, the ovation he got, and just everything that he means to that city. So let's take a listen to the tribute video for Marc-Andre Fleury in Pittsburgh that was played on Tuesday night.
Select from the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles, goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury.
Number 29, Marc-Andre Fleury!
I'm into tonight, cause tomorrow...
One-on-one, and Marc-Andre Fleury, nothing short of spectacular here tonight.
Oh, they just made an absolutely ridiculous, sensational save on...
The entire Penguins organization in saying merci and welcome back three-time Stanley Cup champion, number 29, Marc-Andre Fleury.
That was Marc-Andre Fleury's video as he returned to Pittsburgh, and it was really touching. If you could see it, you'd be able to see signs that fans were holding up saying, welcome home, you're a hero, thank you for everything. And he was an icon in the city and was a great player on the ice. In 13 seasons, he was 375, 216, and 66, which is just an absolutely terrific win percentage, with two ties, which I think is an interesting fact because it shows how long he's been in Pittsburgh. He was in Pittsburgh, you know, since I was 5 years old. He's really been in Pittsburgh his whole life, basically, and the change moving to Las Vegas, of all places, must have been a real culture shock for him. He also had a 2.58 goals against average, which the New York Islanders, for example, would be dying to have a goalie with that goals against average, and 0.912 save percentage. He dealt with injuries in his defense. He dealt with a lot of problems, injuries, dealing with Matt Murray taking his job, which he eventually did. But he was a true professional, and in this game, he was crying like a baby after that video. And I don't know how I would be able to play after seeing that video. I would just, if I did something for my life for 13 years and had to leave it very tragically, didn't want to leave the Penguins, but he had to because otherwise he would have been traded, and he had to waive his no-move clause. And, you know, he didn't want to leave Pittsburgh, but he did. And if I had to leave that place and then, you know, had to watch a video for 3 whole minutes about, you know, all my time there, you know, all the charity I did, all the Stanley Cups he won, and I would be crying, and he was crying, and he was shaken up. I don't know how he was able to get back into the game. It's a great way for the Penguins to get a sort of edge because, you know, they basically took out the other team's goalie for a period because he was just so upset. You know, he was crying, I'm sure happy tears, but, you know, he was very distracted, I'm sure. So that was Marc-Andre Fleury returning to Pittsburgh, and that's definitely a big, news in the hockey world this week. Next, we are going to talk about Philip Forsberg because he was suspended for 3 games by the NHL. And it was a very questionable decision by the NHL to suspend Philip Forsberg. He has never been suspended in his career. He's been a, you know, the epitome of a fair sport. He's really shown other players that he is a respectful player. He doesn't, you know, try to hit players in a cheap way. But, you know, he hit Jimmy Vesey with a questionable hit. It certainly wasn't clean. He probably deserved a 2-minute minor for interference. But they suspended him for 3 games, which is, that's a lot. If this was a baseball season, that would be a 6-game suspension. If this was football, that would be, you know, a 1-game suspension. This was a big suspension in the NHL. It's one you don't see that often. And the video, which I'm about to show you the audio of, he was not really doing anything he doesn't usually do. He has, you know, he's not the most physical player, but one thing he has added to his game recently is this sort of sideways check that he does, which in no way is him trying to injure a player, but it's a way for him to get an advantage because he doesn't have the size that other players have. And it wasn't really a cheap hit, and I will talk about the hypocrisy later, but this is the audio of Philip Forsberg hitting Jimmy Vesey in this week's Rangers game.
Vesey back to play the puck, took a hit. Vesey got knocked down, and he's slow.
Here it comes again. Yeah, that's it. He gets him with an elbow right in the head. That's his reverse hit that he's been working on just the last few years. Here it is again. The puck is already, now this is slow motion, which you have to keep in mind. The puck is already the other way. And Forsberg, that reverse hit is when you turn and you go in with your backside into the hit.
So Philip Forsberg obviously tried to not injure Jimmy Vesey. He was a little shaken up. He was bloody after. But it's something he's done a lot. And then to get this 3-game suspension was a very interesting decision by the NHL. I do want to look at some of the past suspensions that have been given out or not given out. And the hypocrisy in the NHL is just really apparent with these suspensions. Just like it's obvious in the NFL that Tom Brady gets treated unfairly, whether it's with referees, Deflategate, all this good stuff. There is absolutely no fluency in the NHL when it comes to suspensions. And I'm talking about Sidney Crosby. When he throws Gatorade bottles on the ice, slams P.K. Subban's head into the ice 10 times, and slashes Mark Methot's finger off. And yes, this just shows how, you know, brutal a game hockey is. He took his stick, slashed, which means he slams the stick into the hands of Mark Methot, Ottawa Senators, at the time defenseman, and his finger just came right off. Like, it was just the craziest thing to see. And he did not even get a penalty in any of these plays. He was not even, you know, penalized by the NHL. It's because he's a star player. It's because he's on the Penguins. And, you know, a player like Philip Forsberg, who's been clean his whole career, is getting a 3-game suspension when you have Philip, you know, when you have Sidney Crosby doing 10 times worse. Laviolette on that Subban incident said, "I don't understand the call. The call was a coincidental minor penalty." Subban also got a penalty. "I saw my guy getting his head cross-checked to the ice 10 times. That's ex-Islanders coach Peter Laviolette, who all Islanders fans respect greatly. And he's a great coach. And for him to say that, it really shows the NHL has some, you know, things that they need to work on when it comes to these suspensions. They just got a new player of safety head in, and I can't say he's doing a great job. Brad Marchand's another guy. Brad Marchand possibly just ruined. I mean, like, he destroyed the career of Marcus Johansson. And Marcus Johansson's a great player who, just like Rob Gronkowski in the NFL, just like other players, he has a lot of concussion issues. And when you're playing a player like that, you got to be sympathetic of that and not go after this guy's head. And Brad Marchand, just out of nowhere, completely blindly, just goes up to Johansson and elbows him in the face. And it was a brutal thing to see. Johansson was, you know, on the ground. He was really not in it, and it was a really scary sight to see. Marchand's the type of guy who laughs after a hit like that. He takes pictures with fans telling, you know, hoping for, with signs that are hoping for his extermination. I mean, he is really just a brutal guy, and he just cheap shots on a nightly basis. I remember earlier in the year he cheap shot at John Tavares, and his leg sweeps, which are just the most terrible thing you'll ever see. He's done it just about to every NHL player. Apparently that's okay when players are getting knee injuries and leg injuries. And his famous leg sweeping move, you know, only gets a slap on the wrist. He barely gets suspended for that. He just gets fines. It's okay for stars to go around hitting players and, you know, injuring players like Brad Marchand and Sidney Crosby. But a borderline star, Philip Forsberg, who's doing everything he can to get it in the same category as them, gets a 3-game suspension for a hit that's not even illegal in the slightest. It was just a, you know, an accident of sorts, and it was he didn't deserve a suspension. So that's something to keep in mind. The NHL really needs to work on that. And it's clear that politics, and just like the Nassau Coliseum, it's clear that politics and, you know, who's a fan favorite really play a role in suspensions and how stars are treated differently in the NHL, which is definitely a shame. So now moving on to Connor McDavid. He is the league's best player, arguably. He's right up there with Sidney Crosby, and he has had a fantastic year. It's really important to note out that in our segment of Let's Talk Hockey, he is hockey. I mean, he is the face of hockey at this point. He's the best player in the league, and he's being compared to Wayne Gretzky, who's the greatest player of all time. A quote from NBC Sports Pro Hockey Talk says that considering the fact that he plays for the Edmonton Oilers, it's probably most tempting to compare Connor McDavid to Wayne Gretzky. In that article, he later goes on to explain that that's not that unfair of a comparison. Connor McDavid's a generational player. And speaking of NBC Sports Pro Hockey Talk, next week, this is big news, we'll be interviewing Sean Leahy, the lead writer of Pro Hockey Talk. So that will be an amazing interview, just like Jim Baumbach was today. And I'm really looking forward to having him on the show. So back to Connor McDavid. He had a wonderful 4-goal, 1-assist effort in a victory against the league-leading Tampa Bay Lightning. And now McDavid is tied for third place in scoring in the NHL with 61 points. And for those of you who don't know, a point is either a goal or an assist. And he's just 5 behind Nikita Kucherov, the player that he beat, who has 66 points for the NHL lead. Edmonton only has 50 points and is 13th in the Western Conference after predictions had them winning the President's Trophy and had them really going far in the playoffs. They had a good roster, but unfortunately things just aren't going right for them. Their defense is really showing as a weakness, and their offense doesn't have any depth. And players like Leon Draisaitl, who they just signed to a big contract, aren't doing great. And players like Milan Lucic, who they signed to a gigantic contract, is doing terrible. He's not a player that this team needs on this roster, and he's not doing great. And, you know, trades, I really want to bring up the trades of Peter Chiarelli. Peter Chiarelli is proving time and time again that he's an atrocious GM and is not able to lead a team to relevance, even when you have an NHL great like Connor McDavid. You know, he traded, as a member of the Boston Bruins, he traded Johnny Boychuk to the Islanders for 2 second-round picks and a conditional third-round pick, which they never even got. And that trade was due to some salary cap restrictions, but he gave up Johnny Boychuk for basically nothing, and he has been a great player for the Islanders. Sure, he has some injury problems, but he would have been great for Boston, who has some defensive issues now, although they are one of the league's best teams, thanks to the departure of Peter Chiarelli. The Islanders have a line. They, you know, their whole team basically is made up of Peter Chiarelli talents. They have a line that they just broke up recently due to some injuries, but their line of Matt Barzal, Anthony Beauvillier, and Jordan Eberle, which was one of the best lines in hockey, probably the best second line in hockey, was nicknamed the Peter Chiarelli line because all players came from Peter Chiarelli. The Islanders acquired Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strome, and Ryan Strome is just not a good hockey player. It's clear. I'm not sure why they did that, whether it was his last name because of the family or whether it was because they wanted to get a cap dump for 2 years. But, you know, the point of cap dumps is you're not supposed to trade great players and keep bad ones around. The point is you're supposed to, you know, trade players who, you know, ideally aren't really fitting on your team. And Jordan Eberle was a 50-point player. He's a, you know, a talent for the Islanders, and he is really one of the best players in hockey, one of the comeback players in hockey, and he has led the Islanders this year. And, you know, Peter Chiarelli gave him up. And then you have the Matt Barzal trade, which was just a ridiculous mistake. Matt Barzal is going to be one of the best players in hockey coming up, and Peter Chiarelli gave him up. And the pick that was used to draft Anthony Beauvillier for Griffin Reinhart, who is a Vegas Knights, Chicago Wolves, actually, defenseman right now, playing in the AHL and just not really living up to his expectations as a top pick. And, you know, when there are free agents out there that they could have signed for defense, why give up two high picks? And, you know, one of them being Matt Barzal, just for a defenseman that is failing. It's just a really sad thing to watch Peter Chiarelli really blow a terrific team that is the Edmonton Oilers just because he's made the wrong moves and now he's being reluctant to make other moves because of the salary cap. He also overpaid Milan Lucic, as I discussed, who's a player they don't really need, and botched Justin Schultz's career. He was a young, great talent, and he just ruined everything about this player. And, you know, all he needed was a change of scenery. He's off in the Pittsburgh Penguins now. He's a top four defenseman. He's playing 20 minutes a night. He is a great offensive threat, too, you know, leading one of their, you know, one of their top power play units, which is the best in hockey. And, you know, Justin Schultz, I wrote an article on our old website, allislanders.com, and I said the Islanders should have traded for Justin Schultz because Peter Chiarelli is just absolutely ruining everything about this player. So, you know, that's Peter Chiarelli for you. A lot of problems with him, and he is going to ruin Connor McDavid's great season and possibly his career. So let's see how that story unfolds. Maybe they'll make the playoffs, maybe they won't, but at 13th in the Western Conference, I doubt they do. So now on to the Florida Panthers, who have four wins in a row with a third-string goalie. Ironically, last week I did a segment on how bad the Florida Panthers were, how their players weren't players that should be around because they should have players like Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault. And they have just turned things around. Hari Sateri, of course, comes in against the New York Islanders, who always lose to backup goaltenders. They never beat backup goaltenders. And as we discussed, he wasn't doing great. He was 0-3-1 at the time. And the Islanders really should have won that game, but he shut them down. And now he's 4-3-1. So he went from 0-3-1, and then after a win against the Islanders, that jump-started his resurgence. Now he's 4-3-1. And Hari Sateri was once someone in the hockey world who was unrecognizable. He played for an AHL team that no longer exists. He played in a country where he didn't even speak the language, which is the ultimate. You see the Ball brothers in basketball doing that. That means that things aren't going right in your career. And he has waited his whole life for this opportunity to start in the NHL, and after a rough start, he's making the most of it. You know, stories like this in hockey are really one of my favorite things. I love the goalie resurgence stories. You have Jeff Glass in Chicago, Andrew Hammond in Ottawa, and these players are just guys who haven't gotten a shot, and then they get their shot due to injuries, and they come up and make the most of it, and it's hard for them to get their job, the player who comes back to get their job back, just because these players are doing so well. And now you see the Florida Panthers. You see them sitting 6 points out of a playoff spot and, you know, climbing, and they're getting to where some Metropolitan Division teams are. And if they can really sneak into the playoffs as that fourth team from the Atlantic, the Metropolitan Division will be screwed because there are eight teams that could compete in that division in the playoffs. And right now, if the Panthers sneak in, that will take one out of the five spots away, which will lead them with only four spots, which would possibly take in a position like the Islanders or the Rangers or the Hurricanes out of the playoffs, which is not good. So we need, as Islanders fans, for the Panthers to stop surging. But if you're Panthers fans, you want Hari Sateri to keep, you know, keep things up. He was named the NHL Second Star of the Week for his nearly perfect effort last week with a .946 save percentage and 1.67 goals against. And he has responded to rushes with huge saves. He really had some big saves against the Islanders, and he's playing like he's an elite goaltender. You couldn't tell the difference between him and a Jonathan Quick or a Tuukka Rask. He's really playing great. So Florida Panthers are something to keep in mind because they could sneak into the playoffs as a team that no one expected, and they have some issues. They don't have Marchessault, they don't have Riley Smith, two players lighting it up in Vegas, but if they can keep things going with Hari Sateri, of all people, as their goaltenders, you can see them sneak in to a playoff spot, and that fourth team in the Atlantic kicking out a team like the Falling Rangers, the Islanders, or even a team like the Devils, the Flyers, Hurricanes. So it's just a crazy story to keep in mind. Panthers, let's hope, being an Islanders fan, they don't surge, but they're really doing great things in the Atlantic Division. So that was our segment, Let's Talk Hockey. It's tough to be on the radio solo, but it's a lot of fun to just sit here and talk about all things going on with hockey. So I hope you enjoyed that. Right now, unfortunately, we have to take a brief commercial break, but we will be right back to talk about the Islanders' next game against the Buffalo Sabres, as well as some trade rumors, including Matt Martin, which we all love to talk about, and some defensive injuries. So that was that, and I hope you guys stay tuned to our next segment.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113. Or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. This is David Lazar on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio, the voice of business. And for those of you listeners who come from my Instagram, Drive for Five, it is time to talk about the Islanders. And the Islanders are a very stressful team to watch, as any casual observer would note. And the team right now is having a lot of issues. There are defensive injuries just everywhere on the Islanders. Johnny Boychuk, Calvin DeHaan, Scott Mayfield is now added to that injury pile with a month ankle injury, and we were given news from a follower who knows the team doctor that he has a broken ankle, which seems to be confirmed now. Scott Mayfield will be out for a month with an ankle injury, and this leaves the Islanders' defense being Nick Leddy, Dennis Seidenberg, Sebastian Aho, Thomas Hickey, Ryan Pulock, and Adam Pellick. And the reason I don't have that in my notes or anything, I just know that from memory, just because those players stick in my head as players that should not be in the NHL, besides Nick Leddy and potentially Ryan Pulock. That's just not a good group. It's not one any team would want. And some followers have commented on my Instagram post today. That is the worst defensive unit I've ever seen. And it'd be interesting to see if that's one of the worst of all time, because there are five players in there who are having bad years. And it's just going to be a liability out there for the goaltender, whether that's Yaroslav Lock or Thomas Greiss, and Doug Waite, the coach. And Garth Snow needs to do something now, because John Tavares has said the trade deadline and Garth Snow's ability to react to these situations will affect his decision and possibly be one of the main forces that drives his decision if he wants to return to the Islanders next year. And if he sees that the Islanders are putting out a defense that is just atrocious, the worst in hockey, and doing nothing about it, John Tavares isn't going to want to stay. So you're going to lose John Tavares, you're going to lose Scott Mayfield for a month, but you're going to lose everything. I mean, this is a stretch for the Islanders where I am not overreacting right now. It is so crucial. The team needs to make the playoffs this year. I don't care how good the Metropolitan Division is. I don't care what else happens. They need to show to John Tavares that he should stay, and they need to do everything they can. Chris Tanev, Niklas Hjalmarsson, Erica Branson, even players like Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Erik Karlsson, Tyson Barry, even one of those names that's a bigger name, they need to do something. They need to make a trade, because John Tavares will leave if they don't. Doug Waite, he's the Islanders' coach, and he's had a rough go of things so far this season, ever since December. He is making very questionable lineup decisions. Ross Johnson comes in, plays tremendously in two games, scores a goal, and he's benched for multiple games now. games that the Islanders have lost, and the Islanders have no physicality whatsoever. No physicality. Scott Mayfield, everyone claims he's physical, but he's a big baby out there. He doesn't know how to use his body. He doesn't fight. And the Islanders, just like the Rangers and other struggling teams in the NHL, have no physicality. Ross Johnson comes in. He's a cheap man's version of Matt Martin, was doing even better, scoring a goal. And what does Doug White do? He benches him. What does Doug White do? He puts Dennis Seidenberg with Nicoletti. What does Doug White do? He plays Jason Chimera every game this season. Doug White, say what you want about him. I love the man, but he has not been doing good this season. And could his job be something that is lost because of it? I doubt it. The Islanders wouldn't make that big of a move. That's not something they like to do. And that wouldn't really show to John Tavares that, you know, they're a confident organization, that they're able to keep their cool. He wants them to make a trade. He doesn't want them to fire Doug White. So the talk regarding the firing of Doug White, I don't know if that's really justified, because to be completely honest, Doug White's been doing a bad job. I can attest to that. I don't think he's been doing great, but should he be fired? I don't know. I'd say no. Matt Martin, Arthur Staple of The Athletic now. I've known Arthur Staple for a while. He's a great guest. I like to talk to him. But he just reported that the Islanders would love for a Matt Martin reunion, but a lot of things need to happen. The Maple Leafs need to retain salary for this player who has been benched every game recently, has lost his spot on the young Maple Leafs team, and they would love to get rid of him. So the Islanders need the Leafs to retain salary and take on a contract to make it fair. This just seems like a match made in heaven, because the Islanders have two contracts, Nikolaj Kuhlman and Jason Chimera, preferably Jason Chimera, that would be perfect to match up with Matt Martin. Jason Chimera has a one-year, $2.5 million deal. Matt Martin has 2 years left at $2.25. Why don't the Islanders trade Jason Chimera for Matt Martin, throw in a low pick, throw in a sixth-round pick, Lou Lamoriello will appreciate that, and have them retain $1 million? That would be a perfect deal. That $1 million that the Leafs pay won't be too much for them. It'll be better than paying his $2.25. That $1.25 million they save will be able to go to a young gun like Austin Matthews or William Nylander. And I really, really think that that's a deal that both teams need to make. It will be a match made in heaven, and the best fourth line in hockey will be reunited. So let's just hope that Gar Snow is able to pull out a deal. This is not a big deal. This is not one that will push the Islanders to the playoffs, but it's a great locker room deal. It's a great deal that will give back some chemistry, and I have physical goosebumps of thinking of Matt Martin in an Islanders jersey again. He was one of my favorite players, and just the idea of having him back in the blue and orange is something that I really want to see, and I think it needs to happen, especially if you're only giving up Jason Chimera, who's been terrible this year, and a low-round pick, and their retaining salary. You need to do it, and I hope Gar Snow does. Coming up this week, the Islanders play the Buffalo Sabres in Buffalo, the Detroit Red Wings, and then the Calgary Flames in a difficult 3-4 series. I hope the Islanders win two of these. They're not against great teams, but you'll see the Islanders probably lose a game, if not two or three. This seems like a time with their failing defense that they will fall apart. I'm trying to be positive here, but the defense is just so bad that it really is hard to be positive. So I don't know what's going to happen, but in Buffalo, the Islanders need strong goaltending. They need their defense to step up, and Dennis Seidenberg cannot be a liability out there. He was on the ice for 17 of their shots in their last game. They gave up 26 to Columbus in the first period. Dennis Seidenberg was on the ice for 17 of them. Yeah, 17 out of 26, which is a crazy number. And that's something that needs to change. Dennis Seidenberg needs to play like he belongs with Nicoletti instead of just being a liability on the ice. And I hope things change with that. Regarding the Islanders game on Monday, that's something interesting to talk about. I want to bring it up quickly. The Islanders botched a game against the Nashville Predators that they were leading 4-2, and they lost 5-4. That's a Jack Capuano-esque game, and it needs to stop, because if the Islanders are giving up points, which they haven't done this year, they're just not going to make the playoffs. So that's it with the Islanders. It was great to talk about them. We will try to bring up the Islanders as much as we can on this show. We are destination hockey, but our roots come from the island, so let's talk about the Islanders as much as we can. So, guys, that was our episode of Destination Hockey on the 100 in Chamber Radio. It was a terrific experience to interview Jim Bomback of Newsday, and next week we have some terrific guests coming on. We have two guests, one of whom is the lead writer of NBC Pro Hockey Talk. So make sure you stay tuned for that next week at 5 p.m. on the 100 in Chamber Radio. To those of you listening, thank you so much for sticking with us, and I hope to see you guys here next week. Thank you so much, guys.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-